Welcome to Tech Live. Stephanie Christopher here, CEO of The Executive Connection. We connect leaders with a trusted network of people who help them succeed. Our guest today is Simon Hunter, writer, director, and producer for over 30 years, working for major US studios and internationally. Currently, Simon is the executive chairman of Waterloo Studios in Sydney, overseeing production and training at Sydney Film School and Sydney Actors School. Simon brings the art and science of character development into a business context and explores the importance of authenticity in leadership. Simon, welcome to Tech Live.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. We were having a great conversation off camera about stories and how that fits in with leadership and business, but let's start with something really interesting. Tell us about your background. What's your big Hollywood background?
Started making movies when I was 10. Never thought it'd be a career.
Yeah. What were you making them on as a 10-year-old?
Planet of the Vampires was one of my epics.
I love that one.
And I grew up in the western suburbs of Sydney, so I was actually 10 years old with video equipment. They used to give it to me. I don't know how we did it. Getting chased by people, I think, that wanted the video equipment to sell it at pubs. And we just made documentaries. I made documentaries at school. I didn't do it for any other reason than I thought it was fun. It was kind of my tennis, my football.
Yeah.
And a bit of a nerdy thing to do, but I enjoyed it. Then I finished school. The first job I got was working at a visual effects company as a production assistant with Andrew Mason, who went on to produce the Matrix films.
Right.
Realized I wanted to be a writer. I went to university, studied writing. And then I went to film school and studied producing. And the first year out of film school, I sat down one night, wrote a half an hour Twilight Zone type show, and Brian Brown bought it and made a series called Twisted Tales. And Jeffrey Rush had just won the Academy Award.
Yeah.
And the next thing he did was my Twisted Tales episode. And I thought I'll get tons of work now, and I got none. And I packed up and I moved to LA.
Right.
And I started working in the industry over there.
And what did you do there?
I wrote a lot of TV shows and movies.
Yeah.
What they don't teach you at film school is you can make a pretty good living selling TV shows and movies, but getting them made is a whole other scenario. And so there were a lot of times where we were, you know, prepping to shoot TV movies I'd written or shows, and all of a sudden you get a call from the network saying your show's not going to happen.
Right.
And so I was very headstrong. I didn't want to work on anyone else's shows. I only wanted to do mine.
Right.
Which probably wasn't the best idea.
Yeah.
It's good to get a run. But it was a fantastic experience. And then and came back to Australia, and I moved into the education area at Bond University. They used to fly me up from Sydney and I would teach screenwriting. I then took over the film school, and we've had some amazing graduates who've gone on to A-list careers in Hollywood, we're proud of. And then I worked for New York Film Academy, and so I ran a number of their international divisions from Abu Dhabi to Paris, and it was a great gig. I was all over the world, and then came back to Australia and set up two campuses for New York Film Academy, then moved into this position of executive chairman.
What a great story.
It's been fun.
So we had Warren Hogan speaking on The Economy last week. But I can shamelessly say, Simon, you have the most glamorous background of any guest we've ever had on Tech Live, and what a great background. So how have you come to this idea from storytelling, writing, that there's a real intersection here with business and leadership?
Two things happen. One of the things I've always realized is I've thought when they say it's business, not personal, I'd never, ever really subscribe to that.
Everything's personal.
It is. I think when you've got clients, you're having a personal interaction with them, whether you're producing laptops and, you know, certainly Steve Jobs understood that with the aesthetics of Apple. The other thing that happened was I was teaching this structure called the hero's journey, which we use in Hollywood films, and it's, you know, it's a structure that's basically right back to Aristotle. And so what I was doing is teaching it to writing students, and then they'd be coming and sitting to me and talking about their own lives related to that structure. And the other thing then happened was I was at a seminar. I got asked to do a public speech somewhere with just a group of people who weren't writers, about 150 people. And so I just, well, I'll lay out this structure for what it's worth. And there was a guy about a third of the way through the audience who stood up halfway through and started yelled at me. And he was about, I would estimate in my head, 80.
Right.
And he said, if I'd known this when I was 20, my life would have been different. And I realized what this is and isn't my recipe book for how to have a successful life. At college, I read thousands of self-help books, Tony Robbins, the whole gamut of them. But what was interesting about mythology and the study of mythology, which is what it really is mythology actually says life is supposed to be hard.
Yes,
and
I know.
There's no failure in you if it is hard. Whereas a lot of other books I were reading were contemporary kind of personality books that were saying, well, if your life's hard, it's because you're doing something wrong.
Mm.
And I never really subscribed to that. And then when I started to actually talk about or study how characters are created and well-devised three-dimensional characters and teach that to students, obviously you're talking about how humans work. And then finally, when you go to the movies to watch a film and you have a film that you cry, you resonate with the character, it becomes one of your favorite characters, you're actually projecting something, that character is reflecting back to you something that you may very well have not even said to anyone else in your life.
Yeah.
And so that's where I just realized that, well, maybe there was some offering into the business world where people look at their own story. And I designed this course called Your Story, Understanding Your Life's Narrative. Because a lot of people don't sit down and aren't self-reflective and understand that they've actually had quite a remarkable journey. And finally, I just say, I've never met a boring person.
I'm so drawn into this whole idea of your story and understanding your life's narrative. And I love you've never met a boring person. And I'm well done you. Tell me more about it. Tell me about the hero's journey.
Mm. Well, the way that I've structured the course is three elements. And the first one's the philosophical. And what we do is we have a look at Plato's allegory of the cave. And Plato had this idea that he got it from Socrates, his teacher, which was effectively when you're born into this world, it's like you're chained to a pole looking at a wall that has shadows on the wall. And you believe that's reality.
Yeah.
Now, that allegory plays into the family you're born into and the culture within the family. It comes into the culture you're born into. I've just been in Asia for the last 3 weeks, and it's so different to coming back to Australia. So you believe that this is all just the way it works. And what Plato said is if you start to question those things, you turn around, eventually you realize you're chained looking at shadows on a wall. You turn around, you see that there's a road up at the back of the cave and there's people going by with cutouts of dogs and cats and trees projecting on the wall with a fire behind them. Now, what's interesting is that's a movie. You pay $20 to sit down in a cinema and watch shadows on a wall projected, and there's a meaning within that film that partly you put the meaning into it, but there's an intention from the filmmaker. So if you look at your life as, well, what are those, what's the movie that I've been sold in life?
Mm.
What have I been told in my family culture? What's my worth? Now, in some people, their worth is worthless. And there's a reason for that, you know, and that can be the shadow sides of their parents haven't been dealt with. And so when you look at a character and you're creating a character, what I do is get people to step outside themselves and say, let's look at yourself as a movie character and let's look at what is the cultural movie that you've been sold. I had to be good at school. I had to do it, all those kind of elements. The second thing then becomes the psychological. The psychological elements are, we look at archetypes from Jung. And what archetypes are effectively stages of psychological growth. So everyone starts as an innocent.
Yeah.
And they believe the world's beautiful and wonderful and mum and dad couldn't do anything wrong. There's a point called the orphan. And when that archetype is you realize you're actually alone in this world. And there's people like your parents who can't necessarily help you with things. So that's where you have Harry Potter. We meet him at 11. Why do we meet him at 11? Because Harry is the orphan archetype.
Right.
We haven't met him when he's the innocent.
Yeah.
We get instinct. His parents are dead.
Yeah.
Why is that? Why is he an orphan? Luke Skywalker, why are his parents dead?
Anna and Elsa from Frozen.
Exactly. And the reason being is because that psychological positioning is where you start your journey towards a warrior.
Right.
And so what happens is you have the orphan, then there's a wanderer state, which is archetypally you're trying to find out who you are.
Mm.
Now what happens in that state is you start to question that movie on the wall.
Yeah.
And sometimes that becomes very difficult because of the relationship changes that happen with people. Then you also have to figure out, what do I want to invest in life, in my career? And so this is where you get people going off on a journey backpacking.
Yeah.
And they come back different people and they realize, this is what I'd like to invest in. So then they become a warrior. And for the most part, that's the majority of our first half of life, is training to be the best real estate agent, the best, I want to be a CEO. I read an article the other day, some race car driver, he wants to be a millionaire by 30. Because partly that's what the shadow wall showed us.
Well, that's the quest, isn't
that's
it?
That's it. Then what happens, though, interestingly, in this story, in these archetypal stories, is after you've achieved that, you talk to people who've made it,
mm.
and some of them, or a lot of them I've come across, have said, it didn't fulfill me. And the question becomes, well, in mythology, what it's expressing is the idea you become the altruist. Now you can give back to the world. Now you can be almost like the king of something.
Mm.
And then finally is the magician, which is this character archetype. You see it, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Gandalf.
Yeah, yeah.
In Harry Potter, he's the Dumbledore.
Yep.
These old wizards.
Yeah.
But they have the knowledge of having been on that journey, that they can pass something on to the next generation. And so they inspire Harry, Luke Skywalker, all those kind of characters, those mentors.
John Lennon in Yesterday.
Right.
When he goes to see the real John Lennon, goes up that path and he's still alive.
That's it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So those mentor characters are really important. Mm. So we look at what those stages are and where people are at in their mm. business. So, for instance, if you're starting to launch a new career, a new company,
yeah.
you're an orphan and you really are in some ways wandering around trying to figure out, how does it work? You're looking at everyone else that's giving you all this advice and mentorship, and some of it is really valuable, but some of it doesn't apply to you, because in mythology, you go into the dark woods or you go down towards the cave and you're on your own. Like, it's your journey. You can have the woodsman stand at the edge of the woods and say, here's some advice for you, here's something, take a lightsaber, take a magic robe. They're all just images that are basically saying, here's what I've learned, but I know it's your journey, but this might help you along the way. And so they go into that, and a lot of times then you find that those people are stumbling and feeling, oh, I'm just not cut out for this, this is too hard, and all those elements, if you apply it to mythology, are actually elements of growth. They should be going through those things.
So the idea of a mentor, and I get the kind of wizened mentor, but that can be appropriate for you at all stages, not just at the orphan stage.
Sure, yep.
What, when you're talking about going back to Plato mm-hmm. and you said the story that's been given to you, well, we were talking before about people ad-libbing in movies.
Mm-hmm.
So you can change the story. I mean, I guess that's where Jung comes in, but you can change the story of your movie, can't you?
Well, that's actually the third part then, is the narrative.
Right.
So when you've identified what is your story, your history,
yes,
you've identified the positions of psychological states, and on those psychological states, by the way, there's a shadow side. So you can become the greatest altruist in the world, but then you tell everyone else how to live.
That's right.
And so we go through that. Then when you come to the narrative, the hero's journey itself came from, there was an academic in 1949 produced a book called The Hero with 1,000 Faces, Joseph Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did is he overlaid all of these mythological stories over the centuries from all different cultures and found there was what was called a monomyth, a consistent story that we keep telling in every single culture. And it's the journey of the hero.
Yeah.
And that journey begins in an ordinary world, and something happens, an inciting incident or a call to adventure happens to that character, and this is the moment of change. Mm. Now, in our lives, you can get sick, you get cancer,
mm.
you find out you're going to have a baby.
You lose a parent.
All those mm. things are calls to adventure which change that movie you've been watching.
Right.
But we refuse change. There's a big thing in humans that they just don't like to change. They're comfortable in their environments. But it seems to be that mythology teaches us that you've got to go on that journey, and it consistently happens. So you refuse it, a mentor steps in, gives you some advice, and then you cross the threshold into, in Greek mythology, the underworld, which is the undiscovered country. This is the dark woods. This is the, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm operating out of my garage. I'm trying to start this company. Yeah. Even when you go into a new job, you walk into it on first day and you have test allies, enemies. You've got shapeshifters. You've got threshold guardians. You're stepping into a whole mythological world that you don't understand.
Mm.
But ultimately what we get to is, in all mythologies, there's a version of the dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And the dragon sits in this cave, and in the story it sits on a treasure.
Mm.
And usually in, like, certainly medieval mythology, you'll get a very small little guy who's got to go out and slay the dragon. This is Frodo. It's in Willow, a whole range. That's a psychological state, because there's stories of the greatest knights went out before and never came back. So this is all that's left. And that's a psychological state for anyone who's going to face their greatest fear, the dragon. And you ask people, what's their greatest fear? Well, public speaking or death. But ultimately, it has to go back to that movie. There's something in that film that you have put into your internal conflict that you're terrified of dealing with. And in business, that is going to come up.
Time and time again.
Absolutely. So how do you, what the question then becomes is, how do you approach that fear? Now, if you can separate people into a character they're creating and say, how would that character approach it? Then they identify the fear. A lot of times it's like, well, you've got to slay that dragon. You've got to get rid of that fear. You've got to be
Get the treasure.
And cut the dragon's head off and that. Well, actually, in mythology, what you do is you actually befriend the dragon.
Yeah.
And you get that dragon to side with you. And then the story is the dragon hops off the treasure and you get the treasure. What that means is you've incorporated your shadow side into the work you're doing, and you found that there's actually a bigger meaning to what you could be doing than just, I want to make $1 million by 30. The question then is, what happens in the next half of your life? Because you haven't seen that film. And that's, to your point, that's where you can start redesigning the movie.
Beautiful. So much to that. I love the mythology. I'm drawn to that. And the psychology of it is really interesting. So I can see how you could have this story, or this, you know, that you're telling to your pupils or to people who are learning to be a writer, to people who just want to understand themselves and their lives.
Mm-hmm.
How do you tell this story to business leaders?
Mm-hmm. The first question is, you ask, why are you doing what are you doing?
Mm.
There's kind of, like, you have to ask this of any character you're creating. So why, what motivates you to do this? Now, for some of them, well, to make money.
Mm.
That's the answer. That's what we've all been collectively, okay. And I always say, I'm not against making money.
Yeah.
It's not about, you know, throwing it all away and becoming a hermit. Or as David Lee Roth said, money can't buy you happiness, but you can park your yacht next to it. It's not about that. What it's about is finding a way that you can actually have a personal connection with your clients.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times what it is we just provide a service. We provide the goods. That's all. That's all it is. Like, you, I use Apple as an example. Steve Jobs got fired and it went to pot. It was just going downhill. What was it that Steve Jobs brought to that company? What he brought was beauty.
Mm.
That, you know, when you had other companies that were producing the cheapest possible laptop to just get it out, mass market it, just get it out there, what he was saying is, no, the product can be beautiful. Now, when you go to an Apple store, it's a cathedral.
Yeah.
When what a cathedral was designed for, certainly the ones in Europe, is to take you out of the everyday world into a spiritual experience. Go and look at how many people are always in Apple stores.
Mm.
And surely the Apple products aren't working that badly that they all
they
are waiting
all need help.
For the Genius yeah. Bar. Part of it is to go in and to experience something that is beauty, that is aesthetic. And you look at that. You look at CEOs who, like Disney, for instance. I'm not sure where they're headed at the moment. They've got some problems. But at the core values of what Walt Disney did was to plus things. You expect this, but you actually get more. And a lot of that goes against, let's call it the conventional keep your costs down, get your profit margins up, get all of that. If you can do that, great. But if you can do it in a way that people come to you because you're actually reminding them of the good things in the world, or you're reminding them of a personal experience, those kind of elements, it's what we do in movies. We place anchors all through films. When you watch a movie, you know, the glass of water, you infuse it with emotion.
Yeah.
That can happen in companies. I mean, I stopped flying with Qantas years ago because I just couldn't. Every experience I had with them was I was somehow having to thank them to be on their airline.
Yeah.
I started flying with them again recently, and I can't believe how the attitude has changed.
Mm.
And I think that's because of the humbling experience they've just had.
Yeah.
That when everything's going great and you say, well, we've never crashed, we're the greatest airline in the world, and you start to believe it, then you forget who your clients are. Now I'm just noticing, and this is anecdotal, I have no statistical
evidence. You fly a lot though.
I do. I 246 flights last year.
Yeah.
I got on, they were so friendly at the gate. They were so accommodating on the plane. There was nothing that they couldn't do for me in that capacity. And I thought, wow, this is a really different place. And I talked to one of the flight attendants who said, yeah, things are really changing now. And I think they had to. And that's part of the hero's journey of their story.
So a company can have a hero's journey. An individual can. I think this ties back what you're saying then to it's not, it's business, it's not personal, it's business and it's personal. The other thing about leaders that's coming into my mind is the importance of self-awareness. And I think that's something as leaders we need to work on all the time. And when you're talking about, well, you're getting into all elements of it, but when you're talking about Jungian phases or the whole narrative of a hero, I think your story can really help leaders become more reflective about how they are as a person and as a leader.
And I think a legacy for themselves.
Right.
To understand. I mean, I had this wonderful experience 2 weeks ago of a very successful company in Singapore. And I was meeting for a different reason, but they have this induction element where they tell you their story. And so I sat down and they had a wonderful woman who was their comms manager. She sat down, had this PowerPoint presentation. It was very brief but very succinct, and told us the story of the company.
Yeah.
And this company was $100 million in debt. And they went to the shareholders and said, we need more money, which was just basically going to be more debt. They had no vision of how to get out of it. And they had a whole range of workers that just were toxic towards the company because, rightly so, the company hadn't paid them for 6 months. So the CEO took over, and what did he do? I saw it in front of me without me having any – they told the hero's journey. Yeah. The CEO came in, and instead of using three people removed in some middle management area, he went down to the factory area and he lived at the factory for 4 weeks and he met with all of the workers. What they did with the workers is they went, okay, he's a stand-up guy. He's going to, but he reigned humility. That company is now a $1 billion company and opening up markets all over the world in food security. And they told me that story, and I actually at the end said, you know what, I wouldn't mind buying the rights to this story because it's a fascinating story. And I don't think, like, even if you're making manufacturing beds or what, there's a story within that that story. That a lot of times, I guess some consultants will say, well, you don't want to talk about the days in the garage. No, talk about it. Because that authenticity is really important to a client who says, wow, that's amazing. I'll give you a quick example. There's a jeans company. I was sitting on a plane a number of years ago, a young guy next to me. And I just, what do you do? And, oh, I have a jean company and everything. I won't mention their name. And they started on the Gold Coast. There was a bunch of guys who got jeans. They tied them behind a ute and started driving around on the road, and they'd burn out the front of the jeans. And anyway, they sent a pair to one of these big celebrities, music stars. She started wearing them. He said, it just went crazy. We couldn't keep up with demand. I said, so how'd you do it? He said, we wasted so much money.
Right.
We just blew it.
Yeah.
And they didn't understand that you could really enjoy that process. Yeah. Now, I think they're still going today, and they're probably doing really well, and they've probably had some good mentors come in. But that's a great story.
Mm.
That's an incredible story that a lot of people will just brush away because they think, well, I've got to do what the culture that exists already tells me to do.
Mm.
I don't agree with that.
You know, I see so many mid-sized business owners and leaders tell their stories to other mid-sized business owners and leaders. And that's the power of that storytelling and the perspectives you get on it then. Because it's not looking in a mirror. It's having other people saying what they're seeing.
Mm.
And I see the value in that as well.
And I think it's got to be honest. I mean, there's plenty of PR firms that will manipulate stories to spin it. And the audience, I mean, we consume so much media now. People can smell
it. We've become very savvy, and there's, you know, in the time of filming, there's a massive global PR mess happening. And it's all about consumers just don't buy that anymore.
No.
Just saying something is and everyone's supposed to believe it doesn't happen anymore.
And even saying that, look, we're being really honest when they're not.
Is even worse.
Yeah, that's right.
that's even worse. So interesting. I mean, I was so drawn into the story. And Simon, thank you so much for giving us your model. I think there's so many more conversations to have with you on this, and they will come, I promise. But Simon Hunter, thank you so much for joining us on Tech Live.
My pleasure. Thanks, Ed.
So that's Tech Live for today. CEOs are in the business of making decisions, and leadership is the art of execution. I'm Stephanie Christopher, and look forward to talking to you next time.